remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
This is the human
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Hello there, children.
Hey, hey, kids.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
Don't worry, I got an idea.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zach.
Woohoo! Nothing is anything wrong with him.
Because he has a lot of chutzpah.
All right.
Monday, December 15th, and welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adult cancer. I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a proud 18-year young adult survivor of brain cancer.
I'm Kenny Kane, co-founder of Stupid Cancer, welcoming all of our first-time and returning listeners on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, iHeartRadio Talk, or through the archives on stupidcancershow.org.
It is not okay that 72,000 young adults are diagnosed with cancer each and every year. So, got cancer? Under 40? Sucks, huh? Time to get busy living, folks, because the Stupid Cancer Show is changing the world one chemo infusion at a time. Tonight's show, fabulous nonprofit called DoSomething.org is featured on tonight's show. Join us as we welcome Mike Santini, the head of product, to discuss their Give a Spit About Cancer campaign, an initiative that helps young people run cheek swabbing drives to get people in their community signed up for the National Bone Marrow Registry. And a survivor spotlight on brain cancer survivor Michael Saperstein. And a special round of applause to kickstart our show. Good evening, Kenny.
Hello.
Good evening, Mallory.
Hello.
Sean's looking pretty on the couch. Sean is waving on the radio. How you doing? What's going on? How you been? I'm talking to you people.
I'm doing well. How are you doing? Happy Monday.
Happy what? Yes, Monday.
Yes, Monday. Yay.
It feels like we had a straight through weekend.
We had a great weekend. We hosted our first ever Stupid Cancer Meet. Stupid Cancer? Come off the tongue right. A VIP reception for some of our key stakeholders, special supporters, and just really valuable people to the organization. And thank you, Fresh Direct, for delivering our food on time.
Yes,
thank
quite,
you.
Quite delicious food.
Quite
actually.
Delicious food, actually. Yeah, I'll give a presentation. There were 40 people there, right?
Yeah, there were quite. There was quite the crowd. It sounded like a real party out in the hall.
Really good. And on a personal note, my mother was there. This was the first entree into the Stupid Cancer universe. My dad, as we know, was the mayor of Stupid Cancer, but I'm really proud. She said she had a great time, and it was wonderful. Really
yep.
Wonderful. So, who do you wind up talking to, Kenny, besides everybody?
The wall and a. Actually, I forget, from the Genomic magazine. Is it Genome magazine or Genomic?
Susan McClure.
Yeah, so her and her photographer were very interesting.
Susan McClure is one of the, I guess, the original Rat Pack of the young adult cancer movement back in about a decade ago. She was part of the original Livestrong Alliance. She founded Cure Media Group and Cure Magazine and the Cure Patient Summits, which paved the way for the OMG Cancer Summit. And she parted ways with Cure to start her own thing, but I think her magazine just won, like, Magazine of the Year for healthcare, something really incredible and well-deserved.
Genome Magazine.
Genome Magazine, yeah. They just won, like, number one magazine in the sector, which is a really big deal. So I'm glad you came. It was really nice. Now, this is your first sort of foray into the leadership promenade deck of what we're doing.
Yes. It was definitely a interesting experience. Got to meet a lot of interesting people, and it was a good time.
Was she previously on the Lido deck?
Yeah, you were on the Lido deck.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the Veranda.
Veranda, yes, exactly.
So you have to be on a Carnival cruise line to really appreciate the
references. Have you been on a Carnival cruise?
I have, yeah. When it kind of yells at you. Much like the Queen before the show, it tells you, the Veranda. I digress.
Get your ass to the dining room now.
Yes.
That's what the cruise ships say.
Yes.
So anyway, we had a really exciting last week after the show. Tuesday night was the Chasing Life Christmas holiday special, even though it took place in May on the show.
Yes, they had Christmas in May. It was great. Yes.
Lots of drama.
Yes.
Did you watch it?
I watched it live on the iPad app.
Yes.
Yes. It was definitely a good Christmas special, even though it took place in May in their timeline. Picked up right where they left off in their season one part A finale.
Season one part A.
Yes.
Like midterm finale. They're coming back with January 19th.
January 19th.
On Mondays.
Yes.
They switched to Mondays.
Yep.
So they're competing with... No, we end at 8. We end at 9. They start at 9. So we're going to end our show with, like, don't forget Chasing Life now.
Yeah, you can go back to back.
For those who listen live.
It's a Cancer Monday night lineup.
Yes, exactly. Must see Chemo TV.
Yes.
Anyway, I was really interested in the fact that it would seem... All right, so some of the feedback, and we have our guest chime in later in the show about this. People didn't like the show because they didn't think she looked dying enough. And, you know, she didn't look like she was dying enough. She wasn't thin. She didn't lose her hair. On this show, she lost her hair. She got thin. She's starting to look weak. And we're going to pick up on season one, part two. And clearly that trend is going to happen. And it was so interesting to see the comments on Facebook. Like, finally, a show I can relate to. But, like, it also opened up this incredible debate around you don't have to look sick to be sick. And
I don't know if this is the devil's advocate or anything else, but would a cancer survivor really want to play that role?
No. I'm saying it's not about the character. It's not about April Kerver. The people on our forums and on Facebook who are discussing this started this really heated debate about I went through this and I didn't look sick. So it's okay for me to relate to this character because she doesn't have to look sick. But it's almost like it served a double purpose because now she does look sick. So it's filling the gap of all the haters initially who were like, but she doesn't look sick. And now she physically looks sick. So it was just really a fascinating sort of anthropologic insight. Like, how does pop culture factor into the perception of cancer?
Yeah.
Which I found really interesting. And we want to just remind people again about the CancerCon VIP Club. Sean, you're welcome to just pop up to the mic and say hello talk. Sean Shapiro, our director of development, who is in charge of helping to fundraise for the organization. What is the CancerCon VIP Club?
Hey, guys, this is the first time I've spoken into this without my own headphones on, so I can't...
You sound great.
Do I? Yeah?
Yes, you sound great.
VIP Club is an amazing way to get involved with the success of CancerCon. We are fundraising to make it possible and to make it bigger and better. And so...
We raised, what, $8,000 so far?
I think we're over
almost
10 now.
12.
Over
12.
Almost 12.
12. 11, 8.
We've raised $5,000 this last week.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
our goal of $100 billion.
It's competitive. It's fun. You get to win a cool award if you're the top fundraiser, get honored on stage, get a cool trophy. But yes, you can earn travel reimbursement, free registration for CancerCon. And if those don't matter to you, it is doing it for a good cause. The money is very tangibly spent on programs throughout the year. And all of the resources and services we provide for the young adult cancer community, that's what you're fundraising for. So if you want to learn more, cancercon.org, or reach out to me at ss@stupidcancer.org.
There you go. The great Sean Shapiro.
That's the word. I dropped the mic.
Yeah. The great Sean Shapiro. All right. I should also mention that I'm on... the triple Z. I'm on Zithromax, Zyrtec, and Zicam, as I've been dealing with the fact that I have children. And as a product of being a parent of young children, you tend to inherit the diseases they get inflicted by their sick classmates, which is always exciting. So I'm putting out a call to the internet here. I'm going to put this on Facebook later, but I'm looking for that Western medicine has clearly failed me. So I'm looking for a homeopathic, kale-based, OM-inspired, karma-inducing natural remedy. So whatever it is that is actually inflicting me, so posts on my wall. It is facebook.com/MatthewZachary. If you have any magical ingredients that I should throw in a cauldron, cook, bake, and ingest through some orifice, any orifice, I will put that live out there on the air.
We're going down.
Oh, boy.
All right. On that note. Our survivor spotlight tonight is Mike Saperstein, diagnosed with grade 3 anaplastic astrocytoma. We'll find out about what the hell that is in his right frontal lobe, presumably in the brain, at 32 in November 2009, despite no symptoms. He recently celebrated his 5-year cancerversary. Mike is also an accomplished competitive bowler. We got to put him against Paul Berman with 6 perfect games in a row to his credit. 6 300.
Not in a row.
Not in a row. All right, I oversold you. All right, well, 6 perfect games to his credit. Mike Saperstein.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we have a volunteer who's very active with our organization,
okay,
named Paul Berman, who himself is a...
Okay.
Actually, he is the only guy that brought his own bowling ball to Las Vegas.
Oh, I would have done that.
2014.
I would have done that.
Yeah, because we had a bowling night pre-con for the conference with 90 people.
Mm-hmm.
Brought us on bowling ball on the airplane through TSA and everything. So, all right, so we need to have a bowl off.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to organize that.
I will do that.
All right, we're going to put a call out to Paul Berman for a bowl off.
Sounds great.
All right, so 2009, a long time ago, 5 years ago. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
So asymptomatic brain tumors. I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yes. Actually, we had the same thing, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Pretty much the same thing. So obviously no symptoms, but what were you doing that actually said, I should probably not keep ignoring something, maybe?
No,
Where were you? Actually,
what happened was I was off of work at the time, and I went to play golf with a good friend of mine in North Carolina, and it was very rainy out, and I fell because it was muddy. It didn't have anything to do with the tumor. I was clumsy, and I fell. So no problem. You know, I got up, shook it off, continued the horrible round. And when I got home, I was sitting in front of the computer 2 days later, and I noticed what I thought was a floater in my eye.
Oh, I hate those things.
So, you know, I talked to my mother about it, and she said, floaters don't really mean anything. They're not dangerous. But, you know, you have the time. You hadn't gone to get your eyes checked in a while. Why don't you just go get your routine check and ask? And that was that. I went for my routine check, and
Did you go to an ophthalmologist?
Okay. Yes.
I
went in looking for a new glasses prescription, and I left going to the ER.
So lens crafters just went out the door that day.
Yeah, this was like a real ophthalmologist in his office, so maybe that helped him to see what was going on. But
he saw right through your retina and immediately saw.
He saw my inflamed optic nerves.
And that was a trigger.
And he said, go directly to the ER.
And you had an MRI there?
I had a CT.
A CT.
Right there.
Right.
And I had my various neurological tests, which were all fine.
Right.
And then they dropped a bomb.
It's like the drunk driving test, but you're not drunk or driving in the hospital. Touch your nose, look up and down.
They
yeah.
dropped the bomb on me. Right
brain
from
tumor.
A large 5 centimeter right in the right frontal lobe.
Right.
And I had to stay overnight to get an MRI the next day to determine how bad it was.
Right.
Yeah.
That was probably horrible.
Hmm?
Probably horrible. Worst day ever.
I think it was probably more horrible for my parents who were there than me.
Well, yeah, so let's talk about that. You were single, living on your own, have a job, doing your thing.
Right.
And then, mom, dad, I have a brain tumor.
Well, what I did was, at the eye doctor, I called them. Like, the eye doctor sent me to the ER. Can you meet me there?
Oh, God.
So they drove about an hour
right
there. And it was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to make you relive it, but...
No. It's okay. It's all right. I've relived it enough.
Right.
It doesn't really faze me anymore. And that started the whole ordeal from that point.
So, I mean, brain tumors bring with them their own unique sets of craziness and outcomes and surgery and
right
chemo. Like, it's a whole lot. I try not to pigeonhole different cancers by better or worse, but it's like, it's your brain. I had it. You know, I get it. What was the conversation like with the doctors? You're so young. Had they ever even seen somebody your age with a brain tumor?
I found out later they generally don't see this type of tumor in people over 18 or under 50.
Right.
So I fit right in the odd
area. Congratulations.
They also don't see them asymptomatic.
Right.
So it was kind of an unusual situation.
So your, I would say your cancer prevention strategy was just being clumsy at golf.
Right. Or I would say, which I do routinely, is get my routine exams.
Right.
Just common checkups and
so you are inherently a sort of a proactive health person.
Yes. I don't look healthy, but proactively I make sure.
For the sake of radio, you're a pretty handsome guy, I gotta tell you. You're doing
all
right.
I look like you.
Yeah,
you're
doing something right, yeah. I used to wear glasses too, so I doppelgangers here.
Mm-hmm.
Nice Jewish boys from New York City.
Well,
Jersey. All right, forgive me for that.
Close enough.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so clearly shock to the system. Your parents freaked out. Did they stay overnight? Did they?
Well, the hospital was about 10 minutes from where I lived, so
right.
They stayed overnight at my apartment.
Right.
I had to stay overnight at the hospital getting shot up with steroids all night, which I don't know if you had to deal with the steroids.
Oh, yeah.
It's the most horrible part of the whole
Decadron?
Thing. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Worst thing ever.
It's terrible. So
it did make the symptoms go away that I had that you didn't have, but
yeah.
Still, it's still horrible.
But it also took my taste away.
Oh, yeah.
It gave me reflux.
Taste
every
is overrated, minutes. I got to tell you.
Reflux. But I still gain weight. I didn't
yeah.
have any taste, but anyway.
I gained 40 pounds in 3 months. Yeah.
I gained actually nothing from the steroids.
Well, you sucked.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway. So I had an MRI at about 7 o'clock in the morning the next day. And
how soon after was the surgery? Did they rush you right in? You had to wait?
No. I had the MRI that morning at 7. My parents come about 9. It took till about 5 o'clock for the doctor to come back.
Oh, so a long day.
So we're all freaking out
long day.
At that point, yeah. And he said, you know, I have good news and bad news. Good news is it's not a stage 4 glioblastoma, which is the worst.
Yeah.
But he said it isn't cancerous and it's a stage 3,
astrocytoma.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what he ended up doing was he ended up referring me, my name, down to a surgeon at University of Pennsylvania.
Right.
Whose office called me about 2 days later, which is a little unusual. They don't usually need to call people.
That's probably a bad sign.
Well, they had me in for an appointment. This was Tuesday. They had me in on Friday
right.
for an appointment. And so I met with the surgeon there, and he was extremely confident. He did a couple hundred of these a year.
That's the right number.
He said,
like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons. Hi, everybody.
He said
my first surgery.
Exactly what was going to happen. Exactly what complications I would have short term, and he told me I would have none long term, and he gave me two options. This was the Friday before Thanksgiving. He said we can either do it Monday, or we can do it the Monday after Thanksgiving. So I chose the Monday after Thanksgiving, although in hindsight I probably would have chosen the following Monday.
Right.
It's not a great week of sitting around thinking about this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, and I can relate to this very closely, I had a window of 2.5 weeks between you need like massive brain surgery and, oh, wait, we can't do this till January 10th. So I had to go through Hanukkah and Christmas and New Year's and like all these happy times, most wonderful times. Yeah, go to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
how long was your surgical procedure?
3 hours, approximately 3 to 5 hours.
So like In-N-Out Burger.
Basically, yeah.
Except a little different.
Except they took the burger out.
Yeah.
That's the out
right.
part.
No collateral damage for every acute encapsulated operable. They at least dumped it up behind.
Well,
margins.
They said it was generally, it wasn't encapsulated.
Right.
But it was generally a large ball.
Right.
However, they say because of the nature of the brain, it can grow fingers.
Yep, spider veins.
Yeah, so yeah. They got the bulk of it, and then I had radiation. 33 days of radiation, and I went on Temodar for about a year in varying doses.
Do you remember the radiation was cranial or craniospinal?
Cranial.
Cranial, okay.
Yeah, IMRT, radiation.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, really similar to me. I mean, there was no Temodar when I was diagnosed, so there was no chemotherapy that broke the blood-brain barrier. I'm
right.
sure they talked to you all about
oh, yeah, yeah.
the uniqueness of chemotherapy. But I did have radiation to my spine, but I did have 33 treatments. That's interesting.
About 15 minutes a day.
Well, back then it was an hour and a half a day because the technology was basically gerbils on a wheel, you know, moving things around. You know, we were like 1996 was pretty much like Nintendo 64 days. You know, basically Sega Genesis had just ended. That's the technology we were at back then. So, you know, not really that fabulous in terms of.
Did
this,
they have to blow on your cartridge?
They did. They really did. Yeah, to get the damn thing mm-hmm. to work. It was terrible. I mean, I forgive the 90s for sucking for timing or whatever, but it's exciting to know it's only 15 minutes.
Well, I will say
today.
The radiation is no problem. I didn't have any problems with it.
Yeah.
It was easy.
Right.
My parents, I love them so much. They drove out from the shore an hour to me and then drove me 45 more minutes out every day to get the radiation done.
Wow.
So
we do have crazily
weird
stories.
I owe it to them.
Yeah. My dad drove me to radiation every day for 33 days.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah. There we go.
It made it easier.
Are you sure we're not related?
Yeah. Kind of look like
yeah,
it.
I know.
I mean,
exactly.
Post
That's
it up
fascinating.
On Facebook.
All right, so let's talk short-term issues. Let's talk long-term issues, fertility, insurance, all the young adult stuff that we like
okay.
to encapsulate, pun intended.
Mm-hmm. Well, short-term issue really I was only supposed to have some slight weakness in my left leg after surgery.
Right.
That's because of right side tumor,
mm-hmm.
left side problems. That sort of happened. It wasn't that bad, but I had a complication where for a little while, my leg would stop working properly. It would fail, almost like turn into jelly.
Oh, wow.
But as it turns out, that really wasn't necessarily a problem with the surgery. That was a complication related to a salt deficiency I had.
Wait, salt can do that?
Yes. It was something called SIADH.
Sildenafil?
Yeah. It's syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic hormone hypersecretion.
Wow. That could possibly be, and I guarantee it is, the first time those words have ever been uttered in a straight line on this show.
So basically what happens is you sometimes with brain injury and brain surgery, your brain temporarily loses its ability to regulate sodium in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Sodium is extremely important in the blood.
Right.
If you have low sodium levels, you can have seizures, you can go into a coma, and you can die
right.
from it. And
was that all?
Yeah.
Just that.
That's it.
That's it.
You know,
that's that.
It kind of like puts the cancer in the back burner
yeah.
at that point.
Right.
Right. So what happened was I was told to take sodium supplements. It's actually a pill, prescription pill for sodium. That pill was extremely difficult to find.
Really?
We could not find it.
Why not? They don't make it?
8 pharmacies that we tried didn't have it.
Have you tried eating McDonald's?
As it turns out, the pharmacy at Penn had it, which they never told us.
Oh.
So what happened was, you know, I was supposed to go home. I went home in about 3 days after surgery. I was supposed to go home and get strong and better, and I didn't. I went home and I got weaker and weaker and weaker, and it's funny. My father just thought I was being lazy,
right.
not walking.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get off the couch after a while.
Right.
It was just getting weaker and weaker and weaker. So he takes me to get a stat sodium
right.
at a LabCorp, and I could barely stand at that point.
Right.
And doctor says, you got to come in.
Yeah.
He says you have to come in for an MRI because maybe he had suspected a stroke or something else.
Or like it came back. I'm sure that was incredibly scary.
At that point, I don't know if I was very much conscious.
Right.
I remember being in a wheelchair in his office, and
yeah.
that's about it. And I remember him saying, the sodium is very low. MRI is okay, but we have to check you in for a tune-up.
Oh, boy. On the lip?
I'll never forget those words because that was 10 days in the hospital.
You spent 10 days in the hospital getting, like, rehydrated with saline and sodium and all that?
Well, the process is you get dehydrated.
Right.
You limited fluid intake and pumped full of salt.
Wow.
Very uncomfortable.
I would imagine. Must make you thirsty.
That 10... it turns you into beef jerky is what it does.
Oh, wow.
You have no moisture in your body. And what it does is they have to get your body to fix itself.
Right.
And then you have to be able to regulate yourself with full fluid for 2 days.
Wow.
And then you can go home.
And has that been, was that like, and then you're done?
Once it was over, it was done.
Wow.
And
they basically rebooted you.
Right.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. And that was very, very difficult. That was more difficult than anything else in the process. Before or since.
Right.
Is wow. that 10 days?
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was 5 years ago, roughly.
That was 5 years ago.
So I assume you go for post-operative scans and checkups, and you've become even probably more proactive in your awareness of your health.
8 months. I'll be every 8 months for the rest of my life.
Every 8 months for the rest of your life.
Right.
That might change. They told me that, too, and 20 years later, they're like, go home.
But I'm okay with that, honestly, because I don't want anything, God
right.
forbid, to come back and get out of control.
Right.
So... I'll fly back to Philly every
right.
8 months for the rest of my life if I don't live near there. So.
Well, good. Good for you.
Yeah.
So any outside of that, I mean, obviously I mentioned brain
no.
tumors are, you know, you're relatively unscathed.
I have no lasting effect from it.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
That's truly a blessing. Miracle.
It's unbelievable.
That, yeah.
A lot of things had to fall into place for that to happen. And I had to get the right team of doctors,
yeah.
too.
You know, one of the things they told me, and again, this is completely anecdotal, was my tumor, I was born with my brain tumor.
Really?
It typically presents symptomatically before the age of 8.
Okay.
So the fact that it was dormant in my head until I was 21 made it a slightly different pathology than as if it were in my head and diagnosed at age 8 or under. And they, you know, completely spitballing these things out there because there's no data to support any of this, that the fact that you were older with a tumor that should have happened when you were younger or very old might have been the factor that contributed to you having better outcomes. There's no science behind that, But if you are the rarity and this is the rare outcome, it could be possible.
Well, they did also say that age and attitude are the two things that help you recover better.
You seem to be a pretty positive guy.
I was.
Until I met me.
I never, ever thought I wasn't going to beat it
right.
in the first minute.
Right.
So, and some people have told me I was the one who helped them through it.
Really?
Even though I was the one dealing with it, it seemed I was the strong one and helped them through it.
You think that was like a blind ignorance or like you were truly convinced that somehow this was all going to work out?
I was. And some people say that's when you find out how strong you are.
Right.
When you get thrown the biggest curveball you're ever going to get thrown in your life. So maybe that's what happened. Or maybe somebody was looking out for me from above.
Right. Well, I would say the single most important thing at this point right now is, are you still golfing?
Well, I was horrible golfing. So I'm not, but it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that I should have never been golfing to begin with. So,
okay. Stick to bowling.
Yeah.
What you've been doing since, for how long?
20. Serious, like competitively, probably 20 to 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. So you bowled 6 300s.
Right. Not in a row. I'd be world famous if I bowled in a row. But yeah, I bowled. I actually had an article written about me because I bowled one of them about 4 months after I ended my chemo.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, after I ended my radiation, not even ended my chemo.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So did that. Were you messed up at all at any point?
It was pretty sad when I started coming back. I was weak.
Right.
And I couldn't do anything. It actually felt like I forgot how to do it.
Was bowling to you like an anchor, something you could weigh against, like how progress far you've come?
Maybe now that you mention that. I wasn't thinking it at the time, but yeah.
But that sounds like your passion.
It's something I love doing. It. Yeah. Travel is really my passion, but I love to bowl. So.
Right. Where have you gone? What's your favorite place to go? Where was the first place you went to celebrate not being, lacking salt, per se?
Well, after that, after my ordeal, the first place I went was Aruba.
Why is that?
Because I had been there a whole bunch of times, and a friend of mine wanted to go, so I went.
I love Aruba. I've been there twice. Kenny is going to Aruba. Any recommendations?
I think that was 8 for me. 8 times.
You've been to Aruba 8 times?
Yes, I can definitely recommend some places.
I think the recommendation is to go to Aruba.
Well, everybody who goes to Aruba loves Aruba.
I had nothing but my wife and I went there twice. Amazing time. We stayed at the Hyatt the first time, the Marriott the second time. We rented a Jeep, did the beach sand, played to the tire. I'm giving Kenny all the photos.
I'll shoot him an email at the show.
It's going to be great.
And besides that, Hong Kong was the other place I loved going the most.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you are truly an example of someone who gets busy living, and I really commend you for that. What's your message? I don't know how often you speak or have spoken to a medical patients. You need a stage, my friend.
I'm a member of something called Immerman Angels.
Yes.
And I've gotten 2 in about 3 years.
Okay.
2 people. So I enjoy doing that. My message is to keep up with your regular doctor's appointments.
So to just be proactive.
Yes.
Well, it's a good segue to our second segment here about, being conscious of other people's health as a tie into your own personal health, and we can discuss that during the second segment. But I got to tell you that it's eerie how you and I have, it's a decade apart or 15 years apart, but it's eerie.
It was eerie when we were talking by email.
I know.
Too, definitely.
It's crazy eerie. I congratulate you.
Well,
really,
thank you.
Really.
Good to be here.
Do you blog? Do you write? Do you have any channel? All right, so we're going to get you some platform here.
Yeah.
StupidTumor.org.
Stupid Astro.
Stupid Astro.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that
sounds like an indie band.
We'll check the Spotify playlist for those guys. Hey, I just had a relevant millennial, something, and I just failed. I totally failed at that. Trying. Well, anyway, Michael Saperstein, thank you so much.
Thank you.
5-year survivor of astrocytoma.
Anaplastic astrocytoma.
Stage 3.
Yes.
Not stage 4 glioblastoma.
No.
All right, well, thank you so much. And you're sticking around, so you can chime in at any time.
Okay.
All right, Kenny, let's set up the news here.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Head on over to events.stupidcancer.org. That is events.stupidcancer.org. Your one-stop shop calendar for all of our social and educational events happening nationwide. Something could be happening in your neck of the woods. We certainly don't want you missing out.
Are you drunk? What's going on?
Yes, I'm slurring my speech. As it stands right now, we have Houston, Texas, and there's another one coming up. I forget the city, but it will be published shortly at events.stupidcancer.org.
And if you'd like to host your own Stupid Cancer Meetup, visit stupidcancer.org/meetup.
Cancer is lonely. We've got a cure for that. It's Instapeer, our free mobile app that brings instant, anonymous one-to-one peer support for anyone affected by cancer, including caregivers, family members, and friends. Visit Instapeer.org and sign up to join our iOS beta testing community and consider immortalizing yourself on the app with a nonprofit tax-deductible donation of $500.
We launched a newsfeed aggregator on Pinterest for all the articles, blogs, and stories we couldn't possibly have the time to post on social media. Check out what we're reading 24/7 and don't miss a beat. Subscribe at stupidcancer.org/feed.
Cancer is expensive. We're proud to announce a alliance with GiveForward, the number one platform to start a medical fundraiser. It's called CancerMadeMeBroke.com. You didn't ask to get sick, and your community actually wants to help you. Visit CancerMadeMeBroke.com today to learn more and start your personal fundraiser.
It's always a good time to stock up on your stupid cancer gear. Visit StupidCancerStore.org anytime. Stay nice and warm with all new products and sauces to choose from. Be proud. Wear stupid cancer.
And that is your
Stupid Cancer News.
Alrighty.
I'm really excited. It is a really great tie-in. Mike Fantini is joining us live today, who lives in Brooklyn, head of product at DoSomething.org, one of my favorite nonprofits in the universe. He became a bone marrow donor through their program called Give a Spit About Cancer, and is here tonight to tell us about it, the pitfalls, the successes, and all the wonderful stuff they're doing to mobilize youth with this really important initiative. Please welcome Mike Fantini, live in studio.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening.
You are joined by your partner in crime here, Annie.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there. DoSomething.org, what is it?
So DoSomething.org is an organization that helps young people take action on really any cause that you can think of. To date, we have about 3.2 million people across the world who take part in our various campaigns. And they can really be about anything, whether it's helping people who are suffering from homelessness, people who are, getting involved in the environment. And also we have a few campaigns for cancer patients and survivors as well.
Yeah, and Nancy Lublin is your chief old person. I believe that's her title. I've known
CEO
her for,
and chief old person.
I've known her for quite a while now. And I've really taken a lot of cues from how you've been able to mobilize youth. The Denim Days is something that I've always found to be most interesting. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So we're actually running that campaign right now. It's called Teens for Jeans. And 1 in 3 homeless people in the U.S. are actually under the age of 18. So born into poverty. And the number one thing they ask for when they go to a youth homeless shelter, it's not food, it's not necessarily various supplies, it's actually a pair of jeans.
Wow.
Because so often, they're still going to school and want to feel like everyday kids and, act as if everything is normal because it should be. And so what we do is we actually ask people to run these massive jean drives in their community. And they drop them off at their local Aeropostale store. It's a very, easy drop-off location for all of our members. And so last year we collected over 800,000 pairs of jeans.
Wow.
Yeah, and goal this year is to hit 1 million.
That's extraordinary. So how do you rally youth? Obviously, millennials get a bad rap. They're not even supposed to be called millennials anymore, as I'm reading, right? It's like a bad word now to call them millennials.
Mm-hmm.
So, slacktivism and they don't want to do anything, but you guys have proven that completely wrong. Can you talk about your perceptions or the misperceptions of this massively mobile and engaged community?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with you that I think millennials have gotten a very bad rap, being a millennial myself. But we do know that actually young people, they care about cause more than any other generation before them. The real issue has just been finding an avenue through which to take action. And that's really where Do Something comes in. We really try to make it as easy as possible so that someone can, just access us via the web and kind of have a step-by-step playbook on how to make a real impact in their community. Because they really just need sort of like that step-by-step guide. Because so often there's, just various initiatives out there that either don't make a real impact or feel like a monumental lift. We're not looking for anyone to, cure cancer or to end poverty, but really just make a local impact. That's really what it's all about.
Right, and you guys are really good at measuring that impact, too. Like 800,000 genes. Are you able to connect the people that donate the genes with the youth hostel teams that get the genes?
So we keep all the solutions local. So every donation goes to a shelter within the area of that Aeropostale store. And then, you know, for privacy concerns, we can't necessarily connect them one-to-one, but a lot of times we've actually had individuals who have won a grant because of taking part in one of our campaigns, and they've actually then taken the money and donated it to a local shelter because, you know, they're just like, you know, they just have so much good. They just constantly want to help. Don't want any focus on them just to be on the call.
Right, and this isn't about fundraising either. This is really mobilizing a community for action.
Yeah, so that's actually one of our rules. None of our campaigns can require money, an adult, or a car because we really want young people to feel like, you know, they have the power completely within themselves. And so that's what a lot of our cancer initiatives are about as well because, you know, so often taking action on cancer is generally thought of as fundraising. But, you know, if you're 15, 16, 18, you don't necessarily – and that's a very great cause. But yeah. If you're, you know, 15, 16, 18, you don't necessarily have, you know, loose change to donate to a very
right.
good cause. So that's where, you know, we came up with the idea of Give a Spit About Cancer. So basically it was a different means for a young person to get involved. So what Give a Spit's about is actually getting signed up for the National Bone Marrow Registry. And to do that, we actually provide you with a kit. You can just swab your cheek with cotton swab. It takes about 30 seconds to do. And then you're actually able to send it in to then get signed up. And so what we've had in the past since 2011 is actually have people run these drives in their community, whether they want to, you know, get their whole school involved, their college, their, you know, church, whatever it is, and get, you know, tons of people signed up, or if they just want to do it individually. If you just yourself, you and your friends want to get signed up, you can do that as well.
Well, we have done – many, many shows and many, many swab drives in partnership with the NMDP
mm-hmm.
and DKMS and the whole what's that campaign called? I'm totally missing out. There's a do you know what
the Be the Match?
Be the Match. Yep. Thank you. Yes. I'm sorry about that, guys. They're listening.
Great
they've exhibited at our events. We've done stuff together, and it's so critical because I just think it's, you know, I don't have the data on how many matches are made and how many of those actually get contributed to lives saved. They have the data, so go to bethematch.org and find out all the information that I don't have. But, you know, this is something that really impacts youth a lot. And a lot of the cancers that happen in youth are typically blood cancers, mm-hmm. which is the dominant cancer in youth for some reason. That's just how it works. Everyone thinks that all cancers happen all the time. There's an amazing arc of testicular cancer sort of peaks in the late 20s and goes away, and it comes back in the 60s. Blood cancers are the ones that are in the most need of marrow donors and marrow swaps and marrow transplants. So you are directly impacting the young adult cancer community in itself.
Yeah, and actually not only the young adult community who has cancer, but also people within the age of 18 to 24 are actually the kind of number one targets to get swabbed,
right?
Because they have the most likelihood of actually being a match that then goes on to, you know, kind of cure the recipients.
Sure.
So yeah, and actually people who are in need of a donation, actually 70% of them end up getting a donation, or 70% end up getting a donation from someone that they don't know. So they actually do rely on the registry. So getting more and more people signed up, especially in that target, you know, really college-age demo, is really what it's about.
So I'd love you to talk about the stigma, because this is something that has been an issue. It's not about getting people to come out to do something, pun intended, because they do want to come out. But there is an inherent stigma, and I'd like to know if it's still there or if it's worse or better, that people don't really understand what's involved if they get selected.
Yeah. You know, and that was really a big thing that we've been trying to debunk, because, you know, oftentimes people are hesitant to get signed up because they think that even getting signed up is going to be painful.
Right.
Getting signed up is literally taking a cotton swab and putting it in your mouth.
Right.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly no pain there. And then actually after I had been notified that I was a potential match, I went and filled out, you know,
add that you were a match.
Yes, you were a match. So not just representing Do Something. I actually, when we first launched the campaign in 2011, we did a cheek swabbing in my office, and you know, I was, you know, signed up for the registry. 2 years later, I was contacted as being a potential match. You know, filled out a quick health survey, you know, family history, all of that, and then had gotten some blood work just to, you know, verify. Extra check to see if I was kind of the ideal match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within a month, got back to me that, you know, I was in fact a perfect match for a 10-year-old at the time.
Wow.
Who was suffering from ALL.
Acute lymphoblastic leukemia,
yeah.
The most common blood cancer in children.
Mm-hmm. And actually, his cancer, I later found out, had shifted from ALL to central nervous system leukemia, and then finally had gone to testicular leukemia.
Right, so he had full metastases from the ALL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you were a biological perfect match.
Yeah, yeah, actually matched on all 10 10 matches and then, or 10 markers, and then they even tested for an additional 2, and I was a perfect match for that as well.
Right, and we should add that matching is very nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I actually, you know, and that's one of the great things actually about, you know, kind of do something and, you know, being able to get up and signed up and get involved is, you know, I didn't really know too much about the whole process or procedure going into it. I just knew that, you know, if I was able to help someone in need, that, you know, I wanted to do it like so many of our other young people out there. But yeah, but basically just by, you know, looking into, you know, all the various things that they get from both of your saliva that they check for and also the blood, they're able to see basically the various markers that they have that indicate that, you know, the patient or the recipient will be able to take in your bone marrow and will actually accept your cells. Because, you know, sometimes there can be a situation where the host rejects the cells. So that's why they check all these various markers.
I want to ask Ani a question. You also donated. You joined the Give a Bit campaign.
Yeah, so
I signed up. Did you have reservations? What, as a layperson, what was your first thought going into this?
It was so easy. It was really crazy. I went to Mike's holiday party last year at Do Something, and at the office they just had people from Be the Match who were just set up in a room, and you walked in, they give you a Q-tip, you put it in your mouth, you give it back to them, and that was it. It like took all of 5 seconds.
Right.
And so that was a year ago. And then since then, I've gotten one email because I was a backup match
right.
for someone. And then I guess I ended up going with the person who was the better match. But yeah, it's so easy. And I was with Mike when he got the operation.
Well, let's talk about that. Practically, mm-hmm. If you match, you have to do something. Like for real, do something. What does that do something that you have to do?
Yeah, yeah. So after I filled out the, you know, questionnaire and got the additional blood work, they're then like, okay, this is, you know, as long as you're healthy enough, we're going to be good to go. So I had a, you know, a physical to make sure that everything was going to be fine with me for actually physically going through the donation. And once that checked out, you know, I was all set to go. So, you know, there was really very little prep. You know, it was literally just, you know, kind of the standard, you can't eat or drink before midnight, the night of the surgery.
Right.
You know, kind of like prepping the area. They actually take the bone marrow from the back of your pelvis. So it's just like using a scrub there for
yeah.
about 3 or 4 days beforehand. Obviously, you know, very simple. and then, yeah, you know, just woke up, drove myself, you know, with Ani and actually 2 people from Do Something to the hospital. You know, they
outpatient procedure.
Yeah, you know, the biggest risk was kind of the standard surgical risk of anesthesia.
Right.
But you know, obviously nowadays very low. And yeah, completely outpatient, you know, and the big stigma that you hear is that, you know, it's a very painful process. You know, you're going to be in pain for, you know, a few days. My personal experience was when I first got out of surgery, I was, you know, obviously very out of it still. You know, the anesthesia hadn't fully worn off. And I do remember at that one moment for a split second feeling pain. I told the nurse that, and then they just, you know, gave me pain medication, and I was completely fine.
Right.
And then from then on, I was taking Tylenol. I wasn't even taking...
Like it's worth it.
Oh,
like that's the tagline.
Not even
be
like,
the match, worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Not even a question. Like the pain. I've been more sore by having a workout at the gym than actually going to. The
or like either. Mike golfing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not a good golfer either, and I've never bowled 300. So you have the athletic.
You haven't shot 6
me.
In a row.
No. I don't even. I've yeah. I've
so what about
6 gutter balls in a row.
So pragmatically, insurance. Who pays for this?
Yeah, so it's all covered by Be the Match. So absolutely everything. They actually give you a temporary insurance card that you're able to use. So there's no cost to you whatsoever. They even, you know, cover your gas, your parking.
Wow.
And they're like very, you know, want you to expense all of it. They really don't want any cost whatsoever to come from you.
And that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just constantly, you know, able to answer all my questions very thoroughly, walk me through everything, send you tons of information to make sure you and your family members and friends are all very comfortable with the process. But, you know, I took off the day of the surgery, the day after, just to, you know, kind of recuperate. And I was back at work the next day. So within 48 hours, I was back at my job.
That's amazing. It's really great. And I think this whole destigmatizing, even so far as we had a show like this, I looked at the archives in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was a little more painful, and there was much more of a stigma around it, and people weren't doing it. The one thing that I found, and this is kind of, I talked to Nancy about this a long time ago, is there are certain prohibitions to be a match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you I could never swab because I'm damaged goods, according to the National Marrow Donor Program, because I was radiated.
Mm-hmm.
And cancer survivors can't be matches for other people. And have you found that? Is that something that, how do you sort of, or you just send all the swabs to them and they deal with it? Or how do you, what are the guidelines in which you enroll people and how do you screen for that?
Yeah, so we actually have, I don't have it off the top of my head, but on, if you go to doosome.org/spit, you can actually see all the information there, because we are currently having people sign up and actually get signed up for the National Bone Marrow Registry. But, you know, we have all the kind of preconditions listed on the site. And then as you, when you send in your cotton swabs, you also fill out, a packet of information with various questions to make sure that you kind of do fit all of their screening requirements.
Bonnie?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting question because I technically can't give blood because I grew up in Europe and I've lived in Europe for too many consecutive years, and because of mad cow disease and like all these weird things, I can't give blood, but I could sign up for the bone marrow registry. So
you can't give blood, but you can give marrow.
Yeah.
Because mad cow doesn't affect marrow.
For some reason. So,
this is Tony Blair's fault, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I was surprised because, you know, I can't give blood when they're like, no, yeah, it doesn't matter. You can, you know, here's this Q-tip. So,
is that shaming? Like, hi, I'm European. Can I give blood?
Yeah, no, I was like, wait, you sure you don't want my blood?
Right.
I've tried to donate blood lots of times and they're always like, nope, sorry.
That's amazing, like the restrictions.
But it is weird, that damaged goods idea.
Yeah. Because that's what goes back to our origin story here. When we first parted with DKMS and Be the Match back years and years ago, we had this massive rally, and all these cancer patients came. And they're like, oh, no, you guys can't give. Like, what? Really? We went through all the work to get here. There's no alcohol, and we can't give blood. You know, we can't swab. We can't do anything. So I would love to see the, where's the science fiction? Where's the Gene Roddenberryization of this cheek swabbing where we can – I would be happy to be on the marrow list.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, one of the things that, because they also restrict, you have to be over 18 in order to get swabbed. And a lot of our demographic
is under 18.
In high school.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the things that we focus on, especially on the site, is if you aren't of age to give or, you know, you don't meet one of their other requirements, kind of giving you the tools that you need to get other people involved.
Right. Bring a friend.
Mm-hmm. Bring a friend. You know, go to your congregation and have people get signed up. You know,
right.
Go to your... get your teacher signed up at your school, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, I just want to reinforce, we're talking with Mike Fantini from Do Something, had a product here about the Give a Spit program. 70% of people with blood cancer rely on a complete stranger for a life-saving bone marrow donation. I just read that off the DoSomething.org/spit website. That's fascinating. 70% require this, that most people need the bone marrow or the stem cell transplants.
Yeah, and actually, it is often involved with your ethnicity as well. So, you know, there definitely are a huge need for people, you know, of all races to get signed up. Because actually, African Americans are one of the least served on the registry.
Right. So 3.2 some odd million teenagers-ish groups subscribe. The call to actions, I would imagine, are quite staggering.
Yeah, we actually have over 200 calls to action up on our site, and many of them are around both, you know, helping people who have cancer and also just, you know, patients in general and prevention as well. So one of the campaigns I actually really like that we just have up on site is called Mammograms.
Mammogram. I love it. I like my neologisms.
Yeah. You'll love all of our campaign titles, man. But with mammograms, you're actually creating a card to get your mom signed up to get a mammogram. And, you know, we kind of give you a template for making a very personalized sort of plea to your mother to get her her mammogram check, you know, which is great. We also have that just launched recently, this campaign called Ryan's Playbooks, which is actually 6 million young people or children are hospitalized each year. And one of the things that, you know, research shows they really benefit from is having, you know, activities that they can do while they're in their stay.
Right.
Distraction
therapy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so we have young people put together these various playbooks and activity books to then send to various children's hospitals across the country so that, you know, the young people can continue to be entertained even during their hospital stay.
So I just pulled up the BeTheMatch.org website, and it says here that every 4 minutes someone is diagnosed with blood cancer. 360 people a day, 50 people an hour, and two-thirds of them are young adults.
Mm-hmm.
It is the second most common disease in young adults. It's Hodgkin's, non-Hodgkin's, ALL, AML, CML, all the fabulous ABC, CBS, FOX, whatever. But this is really a young adult issue that I'm very excited about to let our audience know about, and, you know, this idea of what we can do together to partner with. Well, we've already had conversations with your team about, I think you had a staff member that passed recently,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to try to work with them on getting our mobile app in sync with. I want you to talk more about Do Something, because the one thing that you do, again, besides mobilizing millions of people on their cell phones, which I'm envious of, mm-hmm. Actually, Kenny's probably more envious than I am, because he's an integration fanatic, so that's where we're at. the suicide support network that you have over text.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that? Because that's so fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this is basically an organization that was also founded by DoSome.org CEO Nancy Loveland, and it's called Crisis Text Line, or CTL. Basically, it's taking kind of the normal suicide hotlines, but taking it to the medium in which teens use every day, which is text. You know, nowadays, you know, young people are not calling. You know, anyone who has a son or daughter out there can definitely verify that. My mom knows that you know, she's text me and not call me, but to her dismay. But you know, so we really wanted to make sure that young people who you know, needed to get, you know, put in touch with someone, talk to someone, whether it's, you know, because they're suffering from bullying, you know, they've had you know, domestic or dating abuse. You know, whatever it sort of is that is kind of inflicting them pain, you know, whether it's, you know, psychological or physical, that they do have someone easily accessible to reach out to. And so Crisis Text Line is actually the nation's first 24/7 hotline for young people to reach out to, and they get put in touch with a specialist within their area to kind of continue the conversation with them over their preferred medium, which is text.
Right, and I was told, again, to even boost the morale of the Do Somethingers, is that the folks who were trained on staff have actually become as effective, not more, than the professionals themselves.
So we have tons of volunteers. Many of them are staff members, Do Something staff members, who, do help kind of, you know, facilitate the conversations, so that, you know, no young person has to wait too long before actually getting a response and, you know, being, you know, feeling validated that they are having the conversation. Because that's one of the biggest issues is, you know, kind of that wait time. If someone reaches out, you know, they need an immediate response time. Otherwise, you know, they feel like if a text line can't even get back to them within a certain amount of time, then,
right,
you know, who will?
Right, because who's going to pick up a phone if you're 14,
mm-hmm.
right? Am I right?
Exactly.
Am I casting a net on that, or like teens really don't pick up the phone anymore?
No, yeah, teens, 20-somethings probably too. But yeah, and, you know, with Do Something, we are actually texting with, of our 3.2 million young people who interact with us, over 2 million of those are actually via text. So we have a lot of our campaigns where you can actually complete the campaign from start to finish just by texting over your mobile phone.
That's incredible.
You can, you know, text in photos of you and your friends, you know, taking the action. We give you the step-by-step tips, and, you know, it's all directly on your phone.
That just blows my mind.
No smartphone required if you don't have that yet. But, yeah.
Nokia.
Yeah, exactly.
It works
exactly.
In Africa,
yeah,
right?
While you're playing Snake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. No, the with great power comes great responsibility. I can imagine the big red button somewhere on some server, like, blast everybody, 3 million people.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we had 2 keys for that.
The nuclear launch codes,
exactly.
So let's finish up the segment here by talking about, again, I want to go back to these myths and stigmas and, you know, how maybe we can sort of measure that and work together on that, because I would love to figure out who's going to say no to this and why, and how do we address that? Because I'm always looking at the finish line. The finish line is this is a proven science. This saves lives. You can actually meet the person whose life you've saved.
Yeah,
and if you have you done that?
Yes. Yeah, so have not met yet. But the so the way that it works is actually for the first year, you can have anonymous communication with each other. So shortly after I gave my donation, basically I had to send any communication to Be The Match, who then forwarded it along to the young person. And so, shortly after I'd given the donation, I was like, okay, what would I do if I was 10 years old, 11 years old, and, just sitting around and need some sort of form of entertainment? So I actually purchased a temporary tattoo book. I figured, what better way to pass time than have 100 temporary tattoos. So I hope mom and dad appreciate that. So sent that along with a note. We went back and forth for a little while. And then actually just right before Thanksgiving, I actually had, for the first time received an email from the mom, and was able to kind of get in touch, directly in touch, not through third party means.
That must have been very gratifying.
Oh, it was amazing. I got it the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, and I didn't tell really anyone until Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So I actually passed around or read the email aloud to my family. My mom, she cries when she sees me.
Yeah.
just in general.
Yeah. On a Tuesday. she was very waterworks. At that occasion. He's 11 years or he's 12 years old now. His nickname is Bug, which is just, that made me cry when I first read it. He's in Tennessee and he's a huge Fisher, loves playing baseball and just, completely normal kid. And it's just so great for him and his family that, I'm just so grateful that I was able to help them out.
That's our campaign. That's our partnership. We'll find the folks who benefited from the matches, and you find the people that gave, and then we can even find the people that did,
match
each other. That's the story.
Yeah, no, and
I don't think that's ever been done before either.
Yeah, no, we had one participant who we were actually able to surprise her with a reunion, or I guess a first union.
First date.
First date. That was a really magical moment that we were able to supply. And I'm very much looking forward to the day that I am able to meet Hunter and his family.
That's just amazing. Was he U.S. born? He's U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
Do they match across the continents or
That I'm not sure. But okay. I think it's just a national program, pretty sure.
So I just, again, was looking for the Be The Match, and you brought this up earlier, that racial disparity matters, and that oftentimes Caucasians will not match with a Hispanic or an African-American or even a Native American or Asian, South Asian.
Mm-hmm.
So are you, 3.5 million people, I'm sure statistically you have a lot of those ethnic groups in there. You do specific outreach to them as well?
Yeah, so we definitely do very targeted outreach. And actually, one of the things that we've noticed is that our SMS communications, our most engaged members, actually over-index for more diverse communities. So really being able to get the word out via SMS and interact with people via SMS, not just push notification, but actually being able to have a conversation via text, especially in those communities, has been extremely beneficial and helped us get even more young people signed up from those various initiatives.
Right. Again, just reading from Be The Match's website, members with these backgrounds are especially needed today. Black and African American, American Indian, Alaskan, Native Asian, South Asian, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, Hispanic, Latino, or multiple race.
Mm-hmm.
And we're living in an age where everyone is part everything most of the time, And what does that look like? And I'm sure the science and genomics are just blowing up to
figure
those things out.
Right, just constantly getting harder, but. Yeah, we really think that, the more and more people that get involved, obviously the better it is. And, I think that's one of the things that, we really want to preach is, yes, there is that sort of drop off and, kind of demystifying that stigma if you actually are selected. But, the first step is just getting signed up. It's a 5-minute process. So there's really no need not to get signed up. Even if you get signed up, you're not beholden to it. You can always say that you don't want to give the donation if you are selected as a match.
Right.
But knowing the experience or having gone through the experience of being able to help someone, just seeing, via the various communications I've had with the family, just how much it has meant to them, obviously, to be able to receive that donation. And again, you know, like we mentioned before, 70% of people who do have various types of blood cancer actually do need to go to the national registry and get a donation from a stranger. So it's, you know, it's really something that that all these individuals really need.
We have a running joke within our black humor joke within our organization, because you can be matched and have a marrow transplant from someone from the opposite sex,
mm-hmm.
or someone from a different race. So you could have, you know, the blood of a female but be male, and then that kind of ruins everything, and you have to get anything tested or whatever. And we've had funny stories on the show about that, like even siblings that match. You know, a sibling will donate to a sibling, but then they'll be identical twins
without
different sexes or whatever. And it's a fascinating, you know, sort of byproduct of success.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the science behind it is, you know, way above my, B in AP biology. But yeah.
Yeah. Mal, have you ever gotten swabbed?
I have not. How could I get swapped, I guess, is the real question.
He brought kits right now. They're on the floor. We can spit all we want tonight.
Yeah. If you just talk a little into the microphone, it actually, you might be able to get something. But yeah, if you just go to dosomething.org/spit, you can get signed up right there, and we'll hook you up with, you know, kind of all the tools that you need, and actually the ability to get a kit sent to you, so that you can just, you know, swab and send it right back.
Yeah, and if cirrhosis, gout, and stupid aren't barriers, Kenny would be happy to swab as well. Have you ever swabbed, Kenny?
I'm going to swab you in the face.
I'm going to go with no. I'm going to get him on board.
Yeah, and, you know, I've actually heard, you know, all types of events having, you know, swabbing events that, you know, aren't even related to swabbing itself. So we obviously had it at our holiday party last year, which is how Ani got signed up. But I've had friends who've had it at weddings, at, you know, graduation parties. Really, any gathering of people is a great excuse to
except our conference, which is 600 cancer survivors.
Yeah.
That's the only place on earth that this wouldn't work is at our conferences.
Take it out of the conference and give it to someone on the street.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Mike Fantini. To have a product to do something and to give a spit campaign at dosomething.org/spit. Thanks for joining us, Ani. Thanks for joining us, Mike Saperstein. Any final comments, my friend?
No, I enjoyed it.
Did we bowl a 300 tonight?
You did. Yes, absolutely.
With the worst closing ever to a show. Exactly. All right. Well, with that, it is now time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
Okay, folks, that's our show. Our 330th broadcast. We hope you had as much fun as we did. Talk to you stick. Stick to cancer.
I'd like to thank our guests, Mike Saperstein and Mike Fantini from DoSomething.org. Next week's show, Season 15 broadcast finale. We are profiling Fox's Red Band Society, a series that follows a group of teens in the pediatric ward of a Los Angeles hospital. Joining us, we are welcoming executive producer Margaret Nagel and stars Wilson Cruz and Nolan Sotelo. Survivor Spotlight on Keith Walker. Subscribe to our show anytime on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Podcast, and Blog Talk Radio. And check us out anytime online at stupidcancershow.org. Remember, folks, if it ain't stupid, it ain't cancer. Live from the chemo deck, on behalf of myself and the stupid cancer team here, Kenny Kane, Mallory Rivera, and Sean Shapiro, thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next Monday again for our Season 15 finale, live at 8 p.m. Good night, folks. Have a great week. Hey, yo, we gotta raise awareness. It's a gift we strive, 'cause not every cancer survives.